Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome back to Defrag. All right, so we're going to get started. We're going to get started here today. All right.
You're getting the death stare from the deer, dude.
I am, dude. It's every week. It gets weirder and weirder. All right. So first email from Magix Graham, who says, I'm a huge fan of Defrag, which this is why he's at the top of the list. And there's one thing he wants to know. Both Gove and Larry talk quiet, which is okay. I don't talk that quiet.
I talk that quiet.
Well, we won't now. We're going to yell.
Now we're going to yell.
Anyway, he wants the volume up louder. Well, he doesn't even want our volume up louder. He wants our intro videos down a little bit lower, because when he was driving in the car with his dad, the outro video played and it scared him to death. So, yeah, we'll take care of that. And don't watch Defrag in the car.
Or at least not while actually driving.
Yeah. All right, so we'll take care of that, and we'll fix that for you. Next email from Sterling. Love the show.
I guess you're sensing a theme.
Yeah. I keep getting this balloon pop-up whenever I open IE9 32-bit or when I open Windows Live Mail 2011. Sometimes as soon as I turn on the computer and launch IE9, the notification pop-up, and I have to reboot the machine, otherwise it'll freeze on me. With WLM, whenever that pop-up shows up, every part of the program that's white turns to black, toolbar is not affected. I haven't seen this occur with any other program. I looked online, others have reported the same issue, but so far I haven't found a solution. Any idea what can be causing that?
Indeed, we went nice back and forth email, got a lot more information. With IE9, we have GPU acceleration for lots of different parts of the application, and Windows Live Essentials takes advantage of that as well, as two programs that take heavy use advantage of the GPU acceleration.
Yeah.
And on certain hardware, the drivers may not be quite robust enough to handle it. It's actually really complex to offload some of the stuff onto the GPU. And certain older hardware and combination of drivers, they didn't work that well with it. But there's a fallback mechanism that you can use, and that's just to turn on CPU emulation for this. So if you go to IE, Internet Explorer, Advanced, you want to check this box, use software rendering instead of GPU rendering. My system, because it doesn't have...
it's like a netbook or something, right?
It has some pretty old Intel graphics hardware in here.
Yeah.
So it's by default, IE knows that this particular hardware, only thing you can do is fall back to software rendering. So if you set that, close all your IEs or reboot or whatever, that should disable it and should allow you to keep working. The other thing that you can do is, of course, go and look for updated drivers. Depending on the type of machine that you're using, if you're having a straight OEM machine and you've bought it straight from the OEM, those drivers may not update as frequently. So if you have Intel, you can go to Intel's site and get the latest drivers for your video there, or ATI or NVIDIA to get their latest drivers, or whatever video card manufacturer you might have. You ideally want to go to the OEM site, look for updated drivers there.
Yeah.
But if you can't find them, you can try the base driver and see what kind of mileage that you get out of it. Otherwise, go to software rendering and you should be okay.
Cool. Okay. Next question from Dan. Love the show. I've learned lots. Now I'm hoping you can help me learn one more thing. Here's the deal. I often wear my USB headphones while using my computer in my home office, but I also like to sit back in the comfy chair that I have in the room and watch movies. Problem is that I often get settled in only to find that I've forgotten to switch the sound playback device back to the speakers. Is there a better way to switch my audio that I don't know about, or is there a way to do this with a keystroke binding or even programmatically? And another one, we went back and forth with him on this.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying, well, if you unplug your headphones, it should default back to the speakers.
It'll default back, yep.
And he says that works, but it's kind of clunky, mainly because he has to get up and physically go to the computer.
True.
But this was an interesting idea. Maybe if he plugs his headphones into a hub, that the hub is plugged into a clapper, then he can clap it on, clap it off. Which I think is just a genius idea, to bring a clapper into any scenario.
That would work.
Well, would it work? Because if the USBs don't need power...
This would have to be a powered hub, and it would have to be not only a powered hub, but a hub that, when you remove power, the entire hub shuts down.
Yeah, good luck finding that. That's going to require just buying a bunch of hubs and testing that.
True.
Because most of my powered hubs, I can pull the power from it, and it still works as a hub for most devices.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Probably because it's drawing power from the
from
the main port on your system. I would not necessarily go that approach.
So you were asking about an IR remote.
Yeah, because I figured, you know, he sounds like this might be in a home theater kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So if you have a infrared remote and a infrared receiver, you can use, you can map one of the buttons to like a macro. There's lots of different software out there that will intercept the infrared commands and do various things on your system. You can launch a file, you can launch a script, you can launch a scheduled task that will, you know, disable the USB device and then switch back to your regular speakers, or, you know, programmatically run any program that you could write yourself that would say, you know, this is now my default device, this is, you know, reset it for your USB. So you could map different buttons to that. And I mean, that's kind of how I would approach it.
Yeah.
Because I got a lot more customizability to it.
Than the clapper.
Than the clapper, yeah.
All right, awesome. Next question here. It used to be that hitting Control 0 in IE would reset the zoom to 100%. Lately, it's been changing it to 125% instead. I've seen other people online who have this problem, link, and I tried Reset Internet Explorer Fix It, link, but that didn't fix it. Control 0 still goes to 100% in other browsers like Chrome, just not in IE. How can I fix this?
So, yeah, if you look at my machine right now, you go to Zoom, 100%, Control 0 is set for 100%.
Yeah.
So standard response might be, oh, I can't repro this. Oh, but no, I can. Or at least I did repro it earlier.
Yeah.
The actual issue here is the system is reporting that the default DPI is at 125%.
Yeah.
So I can show you where that is. Under screen resolution, yes, we put it in wonderful places. Make text or other items larger or smaller. So mine is set for 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Certain systems might be pre-configured for to be 125. You might have reset it to be 125 at some other point in time.
Yeah.
But if you set it for 125, IE, being part of the system, recognizes that that's the default.
Yeah.
So it remaps Control 0 to be the default of 125.
And why don't the other browsers do that, Gove?
Because they are not part of the OS and they don't honor the system default, or at least they don't check what the system default is.
Yeah.
The right thing to do actually would be for all of those other applications to see what the system default is and set their defaults accordingly.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Good answer. All right, next question, if I can scroll down here. How to handle parallel ports in Windows 7 64-bit? I'm trying to use an application and send some data to the LPT1, and it's working well in Windows XP, but on Windows 7 64-bit, I get this exception. The system file cannot find the file specified, exception from hresult string.
What's the error code?
0x800-7002.
Okay, so that's file not found.
File not found.
Yeah.
Can I communicate with parallel ports in Windows 7 64-bit?
Can you communicate? Yes.
Yes.
So it is technically possible for an application to talk to the parallel port on Windows X64. This particular application is having some problem. I don't know what the problem is, because there's not enough information.
Yeah.
You know, the first kind of thing that I'd want to see is send us the app. We have computers. I'm sure I can find one somewhere that still has a parallel port. The thing to note would be, is this a physical parallel port on the motherboard?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it like something that I've got at home, which is a USB to parallel port converter?
Why do you have that?
Because I can't buy a machine anymore that has a parallel port on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I set up a new server and I've got a printer, my wonderful HP LaserJet printer that I've had for the past 18 years.
Yeah.
And it's worked beautifully. I love it. It's still on parallel. I will continue using it until it dies.
Hey, I'm with you. We were talking before the show. My sound card is 10 years old, so I have my own issues there. So I know I can't get rid of it, though. It's hard to find a sound card at the breakout box. But in this instance, the error isn't that you can't talk to LPT-1. The error is that he can't find a file. So
right.
That should kind of clue him in that...
Well, that error code can come from a number of different things. It's a generic error code where there's lots of different APIs that you can call that will return that error code. Now, without knowing what API he's calling, I can't actually determine what is the issue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would love to see whatever application that was. You know, is it a 16-bit application? Is it a 32-bit application? If it's 16-bit, it's never going to work on
x64. Yeah.
But I definitely need more information.
So send go of your files and let them bug check for you. All right, next question. Blocking access to Windows Update. I use a company laptop for work. Usually I work from a client site. Recently, this client has prohibited the use of its internet access from third parties. So we switched to a 3G modem plus hub as a solution. However, my company laptop, which runs Windows 7, is configured to automatically download updates. From what I gather, only updates have been approved from our own company. Either way, I cannot interfere with the process since it's enforced by a rule. What I'd like to do is insert some kind of rule in the 3G router's built-in firewall. Is it possible? Does Windows Update have some main IP that I can block, or maybe I could block it through a domain name?
So there's a couple of aspects to this question, right? So he's talking about the 3G modem, which first thing comes to mind is, you don't want to be downloading large files over 3G if you can all help it.
Yeah.
So I can understand why they would want to do something like this. The other part is that they're saying that it's only downloading approved updates that the company has said, which then springs to mind that they're using a WSUS server, which actually is pulling updates from Windows Update, storing it on their own internal server, and then from there the clients are talking to that server directly and pulling down those fixes.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of different ways of approaching it. I would not necessarily go at the 3G hub level to, you know, start disallowing stuff. I would actually ask the company to say, redo the policy a little bit on a per machine basis so that the user can opt themselves out of automatic downloads of Windows Update.
Yeah,
you
can
get notification
when your machine is in a place where you can download off a network. Then that's and do it automatic or do it by yourself, manually. So that'd be a better route. Talk to the IT department and see if you can get some kind of exemption.
Right, because whatever it is that you want to do, you want to make sure that you're doing it with the IT department's full knowledge.
Yeah,
right, because they might have other. Other policies in place that might interfere with what you'd want to do. So, you want to take the path of least resistance, the least amount of work, and the least changes.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, okay. Next question. I would need to lock a drive with a password. How can I lock a particular disk drive, CD or E, on my computer with passwords? Is it possible in Windows 7? Well, sure. You can do this a couple of different ways. You have a lot of options here. So, tell me.
I don't like passwords.
Yeah.
So I asked the question, what are you protecting against, right? Mm-hmm. So if this is just so that, your little brother or sister doesn't go accessing your game files or whatever and, messing it up, then I would use NTFS ACLs.
Yeah.
Because, you log in with your account, you log out, you don't have to worry about it. It will just, you can strip away all user rights and just give yourself rights to the drive, and then you're golden.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to access it. If you're trying to protect it against,
someone yanking the drive out, taking it to another machine and reading it.
No.
How about in that case?
There, you're going to want to BitLocker it.
Yeah.
Or use some other kind of whole disk encryption.
And is that possible on Windows? Yes, but it'd have to be on Ultimate or Enterprise, right?
Right.
So you could,
or professional.
Could use BitLocker.
You could use BitLocker. You could use EFS. Same restrictions apply there. You can use, different third-party tools to do it.
Yeah, I was talking about how I like Safehouse, and that's an option, especially if you don't have a version of Windows that's capable of doing BitLocker.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about this. This is interesting that you were saying that some third-party applications like this, because they don't load at system start, you could use a keylogger and just get the password, so it might not be as secure as one would think.
Again, it all depends on who are you trying to protect it against, right?
Yeah.
You also have to think about not only protecting the data, but recovery, disaster scenarios. So how are you going to get access to the data if something goes wrong?
Yeah.
If there is the case where, crap, I need to pull the drive out of the system and then access the data again, you don't want to be blocking yourself from doing it.
Yeah.
So whatever tools that you might use that don't come with the OS, you kind of have to ask yourself those questions. And even for the stuff that does come with the OS, even with BitLocker, you have to save your key off to a USB key, keep it safe, mm-hmm. write down the 25-digit code in order to, if you need to put that back in.
Yeah.
So protection is only good if you can still access the data.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, it's kind of useless. It's like, yes, I have, 4096-bit encryption on something, but okay, if no one else is ever going to access that file,
yeah.
what does it matter?
Yeah. All right.
I like to call that security theater. A lot of people like to call that security theater.
Yeah. And I'm a bit player in that security theater. I want to change the monitor display settings, such as resolution, orientation, multiple display, etc., via the command line. What are the appropriate commands to use with Windows 7?
There isn't a built-in command line tool to do that. I mean, it's Windows.
Mm-hmm.
We don't generally want people to be using the command line. And for things like changing the display resolution, it seems kind of counterintuitive to use the command line. But there are third-party tools out there. CHRES is one that's been around for ages and ages that will change the resolution and display depth. Not too sure about the multi-monitor configuration part, because it might have actually predated multimon.
Yeah.
But you could also script something with PowerShell if you wanted to. Those methods are exposed. So you could write yourself an app. It's not terribly difficult if you wanted to do it that way.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. How do I change the wallpaper on Windows 7 Starter Edition? Is there a way to change the desktop wallpaper in Windows 7 Starter Edition? I want to do that on my new netbook, and I find out that there's no customize option in the control panel. Well, it's Starter Edition. There's
you want
not...
the long answer or the short answer?
Well, take both, as usual.
No.
Yeah, no, you can't. So it's Starter Edition. That's why it was inexpensive, and
yep.
it's like ad-supported, and that ad is called Windows, so Windows Desktop.
It's one of those minor annoyances that we put into the OS so that you could, see that the background is actually added value for you,
yeah.
right? Like, customizing your machine is something that people like to do.
Yeah.
And, it's one of those reasons to move to a higher version of Windows.
Yeah. And Starter Edition is for, like, netbooks, and, it's when you make a version of Windows like that, you take a lot of things out, and that was one of the things that was taken out. So
mm-hmm.
there you have it. You can go to a higher level Windows, and then you can
Windows Anytime upgrade.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. Is it possible to keep the control button turned on without holding down the mouse button? Any way in Windows 64-bit to keep the control key activated for a period of time without continually pressing it or holding it down? I want to copy and paste several files at once, but I don't want to do it with just one hand. Don't ask why. LOL. I can't wait for the answer on this, because the answer is nice, too.
There's actually two different ways that that you could do this particular operation.
Yeah.
Now, actually answering the question about not having to hold down control. Yes. So there is something called sticky keys. It's under accessibility settings. So
yeah.
if you type in sticky, you get to this press key combinations one at a time. So you can turn that on and set it up so that you can say which keys
yeah.
are going to be used, and you can do that for control.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing was that you mentioned that he wanted to copy multiple files
yeah.
without having to let go or being able to do it with one hand. And remember in a previous show where I'd set up the
checkboxes.
The checkboxes.
Yeah.
So you can do that. That'll allow you to select multiple items
mm-hmm.
without even having to use any of the keyboard keys.
Yeah.
And you can do that.
And then you can Control C, or you could even do sticky key and
yep.
just hit Control and then hit the other one if you're.
Yep. And that is under single click and underline.
Cool.
And use checkboxes to select items.
There you have it. Awesome.
So two different ways. One way doesn't even require using control key anymore.
All right. Next question. Having just read Scott Hanselman's latest blog entry, Guide to Freeing Up Disk Space in Windows 7, spoiler alert, that's one of my picks of the week, he suggests turning on NTFS compression, which I already do for a number of less-traveled folders that contain static files such as downloads or images. However, I'm wondering if it's wise to turn on NTFS compression on the whole of my user profile app data folder. My system drive is 128-gig SSD residing in a Dell Precision quad-core, so I ought not to notice the extra cycles used to compress or decompress the files on their way to and from the disk. However, would there be any good reason not to do this?
No, I mean, there's...
No problem.
You could set compression up on the whole drive if you wanted to.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you don't, that you shouldn't do it on your app data folder.
Do you know how much overhead the compression takes?
Nowadays, very, very, very little.
Yeah, it's negligible.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, no problem doing that. And that does bring us to Picks of the Week, so you can just leave this up. This is the wonderful Scott Hanselman. His Computer Zen post, and he had a previous version on doing this in Vista, but this is freeing up disk space under Windows 7. And, you know, especially with SSDs, we kind of took a step backwards in the size of drives. So we went from these massive drives and laptops to having a little bit less space, and, you know, of course, everything gets bigger over time, and so a lot more often we're trying to figure out how to free up more space on some of these SS drive laptops. Mm-hmm. And so he goes through a bunch of different ways. And a lot of these, you know, some of them you probably know already, and it's just good management for a computer. But Scott, as usual, has posted all these great things all on one page. And so he's got a lot of different posts here. Winderstat, there's some of the stuff that we talked about before on previous shows about freeing up disk space. Talks about NTFS compression. You know, getting rid of some old system restore files and stuff like that. So it's a good pick of the week. It's worth reading.
Yeah, I particularly like the remove old stuff and uninstall anything evil.
You should uninstall anything evil anyway, you know, whether you're freeing up disk space or not.
But so, it is the surefire way of, you know, clearing out lots of space. I mean,
yeah.
If you've not used... you know, a gigabyte program or a game. You know, lots of people install games, and like
yeah,
nowadays
I had Flight
Sim
X on this thing, and I got
when
an
was
SSD.
The last time that you used it?
I didn't. I did it just because I wanted to try the ATI thing where it goes across a bunch of different monitors, and then I forgot it was installed, and it was taking up like 12 gig or something. So that was like a breath of fresh air when I finally got it off. But then I reinstalled it because I also have a platter drive on here, so I have more room on that. But I reinstalled it to the right drive.
Sure. Well, I mean, for those systems that, you know, you can't have a platter drive, like a smaller one like this, mm-hmm. you can always install it to an external eSATA drive or an external USB 3 drive. I wouldn't necessarily recommend a USB 2 drive. Though.
Yeah.
If you can
especially
all
for
it.
Flight Sim.
Right,
there's
exactly.
a lot of data going back. That's why the game's so big.
Right.
So. All right, next pick of the week was there was a post on Gizmodo for the Tetrashed. And this is the new thing for people who are going to be working in cubes. And I don't know, you can probably just refresh the page to see it. But this is, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. I suppose it's better than a cube farm, maybe. I don't know, it's kind of like giving you your own office. Basically by building this this little shed that you climb into. And I like it for a couple of reasons. I like it because, one, and if you hit reload on the page, you'll be able to see the... Yeah, there it is.
Yep.
So, one, I like it because if I was working in that and people came to my door, I'd have to build something that lowers my helmet, my Darth Vader helmet, onto my head before I talk to them. And it looks like it's going to be stealth, so I can avoid radar signature with it, which would be nice.
The one thing that I don't notice, though, are air holes.
Yeah.
I mean, when everything is down, I'm worried about the suffocation factor.
Go to the next one, because when I saw this, I was like, you know, that's not even the coolest version of that. The Poetic Aura is a very interesting one, too. And this one actually has air conditioning built in, and it's got all kinds of other stuff. It's got a chair that when you sit down, it does like a high-end car that kind of adjusts the chair to where you like it. And it even turns throughout the day so that you don't have sun glare on your screens. So I like the Poetic Aura, so that's another one that you could check out that's kind of cool. And then our last pick of the week today is because I was playing the new Batman game on Xbox, and I went into the options, and it said use 3D. And I was devastated that now I have some 3D technology in my house that I can't use because I don't have a 3D TV. So I was wondering how many other games are out there, how many other games might I have that use 3D, and I just don't have them. I have a 3D TV yet.
Look at all these.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and it, you know, it talks about what kind of 3D's in them and stuff like that. So you just bought a 3D TV, right?
I did. I have not yet been able to take full advantage of the 3D technology yet, but this 2D is amazing.
So, and your TV will take some 2D stuff and kind of fake it into 3D?
It has a conversion factor on it where you can take 2D and it will give it the appearance of 3D, or like shifts it a little bit more to 3D. It's not nearly as pronounced as true 3D content, though.
Nice. Well, I'm going to bring Batman over to your TV now and check this out. But we'll link to this and you can see what other games are 3D. And I am in the market for a new TV, so I'm going to crowdsource this. I want to hear from people who have used Xbox 3D games on 3D TV. Mm-hmm. Is it something I really need to do? Does my next TV really need to be 3D? Or is it kind of, you know, I could live with it. And I'm not so sure how long I could play a game with glasses on before I don't know.
Well,
what's
there is
the trade-off?
There is the
that?
Headache factor. I mean, I've heard a lot of folks say that, you know, even with a two-hour movie, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I can only imagine with games, you know, you're kind of really getting into it.
Yeah.
How comfortable that might be. Although, on a lot of the passive shutter glasses, they are extremely lightweight and just feel like regular glasses. Mm-hmm. Some of the active shutter ones are a little bit heavier, but even then, the newest models coming out this year are extremely light.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking like thick framed glasses are about it.
Yeah.
But the technology has come a long way. Of course, we're not up to the point yet where it's just 3D without the glasses. I think you might enjoy it more.
Yeah.
If you had television that did the 3D without requiring the glasses.
I think I might have to, but I'm going to leave it up to the viewers. I'm going to let them decide, and they're going to overrule my wife. So, yeah, I'm going to leave it up to the viewers. Someone who has 3D and they're playing Xbox in 3D on there, I want to hear how great, or if it's just something that they use for a while, and then they're like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. Because, I don't know, I don't think I'd be as big on 3D TV or movies or anything like that. It's more the games that I think would be really interesting with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let me know if you've tried that out, and you might be the person who overrides my wife.
Play a zombie game in 3D.
There you go. Cool. So, yeah, that's Pick of the Week. That's the end of the show for this week. If you want to email us, you can write defragshow@microsoft.com. Or you can leave us a message in the show notes. Of course, we like to email better so we can go back and forth on tech support on your problem. And we will see you next week.
Remember, give us as much information as possible.
Yes.